The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
I'm Frank Holland, and you're listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. Our show is live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern. Listen in. It is 5 a.m. here at CNBC Global Headquarters, and here is your 5 and 5. We start with a record-breaking rally. New bullish calls for stocks in 2024 as the NASDAQ joins the Dow and the S&P hitting fresh all-time highs. Investors bracing for a big week and a new test for the rally with the jobs report and 2 days of Jay Powell testimony on the docket. We're also watching for the latest for the regional banks and whether the worst is behind it for New York Community Bank and the rest of those regional banks. Plus, OPEC keeps the oil bulls on alert with a new decision over the weekend. And then later on the show, there is no alternative to Japan. Bet you didn't see that one coming. Stocks doing something there for the first time ever. It is Monday, March the 4th, 2024. You are watching Worldwide Exchange right here on CNBC. Good morning. Welcome to Worldwide Exchange. I'm Frank Holland. Let's get you ready for the trading day. We're going to kick off the hour with the check of U.S. stock futures. Take a look right now. You are going to see, well, just in a second, you're going to see stock futures in the red across the board. It looks like the Dow would open about 70 points lower, the NASDAQ under some pressure as well. So this action you're seeing in the pre-market after the NASDAQ joined the Dow and the S&P 500, seeing their first all-time intraday high on Friday, or its first time intraday high on Friday, and its highest level since November of 2021. Also, still well off their all-time highs, but the small caps, they're not doing too bad either, with the Russell 2000 trading at a fresh 52-week high. You can see it's still lagging the other indices, however, over the last year, only up about 7.5%. Also, growing calls this morning for more highs on the S&P 500. Bank of America boosting its already lofty year-end target for the index, now tied for the highest on the street. We'll have much more on that in just a moment. Also, with the NASDAQ leading the gains ahead of the open, a check on some of the pre-market movers. Taking a look right now, we're going to show you what's moving in the pre-market right now. We're seeing DoorDash right there at the top of the list, up over 2.5%, followed by chipmaker Micron. SiriusXM Radio right there as well, moving just under 1.5%. NVIDIA, more than a percent higher. We also want to check the bond market this morning ahead of a very busy week for Wall Street, including 2 days of Jay Powell testimony on Capitol Hill and the February jobs report on Friday. Taking a look right now, this is what we're going to be seeing later in the show, what to watch. But in general, we usually start with the benchmark 10-year. The benchmark just down a few basis points since that PCE report. You can see it right here at 4.19. Also, similar story for the long bond, the 30-year, down just a few basis points. This is seen as a gauge of inflation expectations right now at 4.34%. We also want to look at energy, specifically oil, after a key OPEC decision over the weekend extending voluntary production cuts. Take a look right now. We're seeing crude right now trading just about at $80 a barrel, down fractionally. It was a bit higher earlier today. Brent crude, that's the international benchmark, down fractionally as well, trading at basically $83.50 a barrel. Crude right now pretty much at its highest level since November of 2023. We do have a live report from the Middle East coming up. And last but certainly not least, we are watching Bitcoin. It's hovering right around 65,000 and closing in on its all-time high of nearly 69,000. We'll continue to watch Bitcoin, the cryptocurrency action, throughout the show. Okay, that's your morning money setup. Now, let's check out the overseas action in Asia and in Europe, with Japan doing something for the first time ever. Our JP Ong, he's in Singapore. Our Arabelle Gumede, he's standing by in London. JP, good morning. Let's kick things off with you.
Well, good morning as well, Frank, and happy Monday. And yes, you're right. A lot of the focus today and perhaps the star of the show in the Asia Pacific today was Japan. And that 40,000 level didn't seem to be much of a barrier. They shrugged that off and actually breached that with convincing fashion given today's gains. And once again, at a new all-time high. A lot of this also on the back of the fact that many believe that there are still undervalued stocks in Japan. And these corporate reforms will continue to actually give upside to stocks across the Nikkei 225. But you're right. It's all about those semiconductors and microchips once again. again, partly also because of that strong handover from Wall Street from last Friday. And you'll see here that some of these chip stocks in Japan among the top on the Nikkei 225, including the likes of Advantest and Renesas, once again helping propel the Nikkei 225 above that 40,000 level. Now, across the region, it's not just Japan though that did quite well in today's. Keep in mind that South Korea's KOSPI also saw some pretty strong gains in today's session, and also behind semiconductor players like Micron and Samsung leading the charge out there. You want a little bit of meat, actually, to support this optimism with regards to chips fueled by AI. Well, take a look at this. South Korea reported last Friday, and they were markets that were offline because of a holiday. They had Monday to react to this. On Monday, they did say that February exports of semiconductors surged by more than 66% year-on-year. Thus, the chip lines, or the semiconductor factory lines and assembly lines, seem to be humming right now and could actually lend some of that strength. This also carried over to the likes of TSMC and MediaTek out in Taiwan. They're also known as a powerhouse in terms of assembling microchips. And did I also forget to mention, to tell you guys, that the Taiwan exchange is also sitting at an all-time high after very strong gains in session. Monday has been a very good setup for Asian markets so far ahead of the rest of this trading week. Back to you guys.
Yeah, all-time highs all around the world. JP, thank you very much. Let's now get over to Arabile Gumede, who's live in our London newsroom with much more on the early trade over in Europe. Arabile, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Frank. Look, you're talking about records. Yep, that certainly has been the case as well across Europe, right? Just last week, we had the CAC 40 as well as the DAX, the German and French markets, also move into record territory. They're seeing some positive numbers and really shift a little bit higher. Today, we're in and around that flat line, though, across most of this market movement, despite the FTSE 100 actually dipping off around a third of a percent. Significantly across last week, we saw the FTSE as well as the CAC actually lose steam, while the DAX did manage to gain nearly 2%, in fact, across the entire week than last week. Today, then, as you can tell, we have that mixed opening, but it is in and around that flat line. I want to draw you, however, to the sectors that we're looking at, and that's really because that semiconductor uptick that you had seen across from the US right through to, of course, the Asian trade that you've just been looking at, well, that's pretty much helped some of the uptick as well across Europe. You have the technology stocks moving around 1% higher on that front. You have the likes of B Semiconductor moving a little bit higher as well in this morning's trade, so showing then that the semiconductors are all actually making their moves on the back of what has been a general positivity, as you made note of. Nvidia also getting higher there. On the other side, you have Delivery Hero getting a fresh refinancing deal. It's up 2.5%. Novo Nordisk up 3%. So significant gains across the board then, but still around that flat line for now, Frank.
All right, Arabile, thank you very much for the latest overseas. All right, time now for a check on some of this morning's top corporate stories. Our Silvana Hanau is here with those. Silvana, good morning to you.
Hey, Frank, good Monday morning to you. All right, let's start with congressional leaders revealing a plan to fund parts of the U.S. government through September as they work to avert another shutdown deadline this week. The $436 billion package funds the departments of Agriculture, Transportation, HUD, Commerce, Justice, Interior, FDA, VA, and the EPA. It also includes a provision to block oil sales from the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve to China. The House plans to vote first on the measure before President Biden's State of the Union address on Thursday. Meanwhile, Ark House Management and Brigade Capital are raising their buyout offer for Macy's. They're now offering to buy stock they don't already own for $24 a share, or about 14% more than their previous bid of $21 a share. Now, Ark House and Brigade made their initial offer in December, but it was rejected due to concerns over the deal's financing and valuation. Macy's says the board will review the latest proposal. And shares of Super Microcomputer and Deckers Outdoor are jumping today. S&P Dow Jones announcing late Friday the companies will join the S&P 500 on March 18th. They'll replace Whirlpool and Zions Bancorp, which will take those companies' place in the S&P Mid-Cap 400 Index. Now, Supermicro, which sells high-end AI servers, has seen its stock more than triple this year, pushing its market cap above $50 billion, Frank.
A lot of talk about Supermicro in particular. You can see right now, shares up double digits right now, Silvana.
Just in the pre-market.
Ahead of Supermicro and Deckers entering the S&P. Silvana, thank you. We'll see you later in the show.
See you later, Frank.
All right, turn our attention now to oil. OPEC Plus countries over the weekend agreeing to extend their voluntary output reductions until at least mid-year. That includes the 1 million barrel per day voluntary cut by Saudi Arabia. CNBC's Dan Murphy joins me now from Dubai with much more on this story. Dan, good morning.
Frank, good morning to you. Well, we've been speaking with OPEC leadership and market analysts about this decision. One analyst told me that this move really shows a determination among these producers to defend a price floor above $80 a barrel through the second quarter. And the market reaction ahead of the Wall Street Open really shows that this decision was pretty much priced in fact. So as you say, Frank, we'll see Saudi Arabia here leading these cuts with a 1 million barrel reduction. The other major OPEC producers like Iraq and the UAE will cut by 220,000 and 163,000 barrels per day, respectively. And Russia also jumping in here with a 471,000 barrel per day cut. So altogether, it makes up for about 2.2 million barrels off the market. And this is expected to stay in place until further notice. OPEC did say it would like to reverse, perhaps add back some of those lost barrels gradually, but only when warranted by the market. So there is a lot at stake at the moment, and you really do get the sense that the oil group wants to show that it can respond in real time to the needs of the market at a time when the global economic growth outlook remains uncertain. The Chinese economic growth outlook certainly in focus this week. We have two major wars unfolding in the backdrop, Houthi attacks in the Red Sea, and also, perhaps most importantly here, rising production from the United States and those non-OPEC producers that are all influencing the outlook as well. Frank?
All right. Thank you very much for that. All right. Coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, we've got a lot more to come, including the one word that investors have to know today. But first, Bank of America, now tied with the highest S&P 500 year-end price target on the street. We will see if our next guest agrees with the growing chorus of bulls. Plus, while the bar, it just can't seem to get any lower for New York Community Bank after last week's double whammy to that stock, top-ranked sector analyst Anton Schutz weighs in. And later, we turn our attention back to D.C. and Congress's latest plan to keep the government open past deadline day this Friday. We have a very busy hour still ahead when Worldwide Exchange returns. Stay with us.
From a flat tire in the city to a dead battery on a distant drive, AAA is partnering with T-Mobile for Business to accelerate response times and get more drivers back on the road fast. Our nationwide connectivity powers location telematics, so AAA's fleet can find stranded drivers quickly while being fully equipped with the in-vehicle tools to have answers when they get there. This is elevating the member experience. This is AAA with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
And welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Taking a look at U.S. stock futures with the S&P and the NASDAQ both trading at fresh record all-time highs. You can see, looks like the futures under a bit of pressure right now. Looks like the Dow would open about 70 points lower. It'll be a very busy week for Wall Street and the latest test for the rally, including 2 days of Jay Powell testimony and a February jobs report on Friday. But the bulls, they just don't feel discouraged. Bank of America now the latest, raising its S&P 500 year-end target to 5,400 over the weekend. Strategist Savita Subramanian citing resilient margins despite big swings in rates and inflation, along with just secular areas of euphoria, including what else? AI and also weight loss drugs. The new price target ties B of A with UBS as the highest forecast on the street. Joining me now to discuss, Delano Saporu, founder of New Street Advisors and CEO. He's also a CNBC contributor. Good morning. Great to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Frank.
All right, so let's just go down here with this. Again, Bank of America tied for the highest on the street at 5,400. Last week, we even had Barclays raise their price target to 5,300. Those estimates imply another double-digit gain for the S&P, back-to-back years of double-digit gains. After what we've seen from earnings and also with even small caps, the market broadening out, small caps hitting a 52-week high, agree or disagree with this take?
I would say, you know, I'm a slightly less as optimistic, so you know, my coming to this year is that we wouldn't get double-digit gains, but you've seen the optimism in the markets so far this year. We've been off to a great start. I think, you know, roughly there's some, I do think we'll see some drawdowns, and it won't be straight linear to these double-digit gains, but a little bit less optimistic, but there's a few reasons why. But I think, you know, even looking at, as you mentioned, Jay Powell commentary and other things that are coming up, those are going to dictate the price going forward. And those are things that I'm watching very, very closely.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned in your notes, you're looking at Jay Powell. You look actually at a trifecta of things that might give us some insight when it comes to the Fed. Of course, 2 days of Jay Powell testimony. That's a lot of insight to the Fed when he's on Capitol Hill. But also the jobs report on Friday. So I do want to ask you, what do you think the jobs report is going to tell us that Jay Powell's just not going to tell us on Capitol Hill?
You know, I think, you know, one, the jobs report will just give us more insight into the strength of the economy. I think we've really seen a resilient economy so far and a resilient jobs market. And I think that still stays. And I think Jay Powell and the Fed have been also seeing that across the board and across the data. And that's what's led them to be cautious and kind of temper expectations for the market on when rate cuts would happen.
Right.
Which for me, I was looking at sometime in spring. And now I've kind of pushed that estimate or that projection out to sometime in the fall. So those are things that I think we'll see from, you know, both the commentary from Jay Powell and also from the jobs report coming on Friday.
You know, you're not the only person pushing out their projection for those rate cuts further out. I think we've kind of gotten back to a situation where people think that good news is bad news when we get these stronger economic reports. In fact, Apollo's chief economist, Torsten Slok, last week, he forecasted no cuts in 2024 at all. So as you're pushing your cuts further and further back, do you see any scenario where we just don't even see a cut?
Possibly. I do think we may see a cut this year. And I think, you know, those linchpins that we talked about are going to be, you know, the driving factors. If unemployment, if we see that ride to a particular level, that's, you know, obviously showing a lot of slowdown in our economy. And also, as you mentioned, if we see that headline CPI number continue to get closer to the target, I think those will be the areas where it would give the alleviation for Jay Powell to maybe make a rate cut this year. So
okay.
I think the probability in my mind sticks that we do have some rate cut this year, but not till much later.
Yeah, it seems hard that we won't get one at all, especially because they signaled that happening this year. I want to get to some of your picks. You're actually looking at stocks that have pulled back, not only from their 52-week highs, that includes Tesla, it's about 32% off its 52-week high, but they're also off their 2021 highs. Even as the market goes to all-time highs now, there's still some pockets where you can get some deals. So give me your thesis, because you again said you're expecting a drawback. So do you buy these things that are down right now, or do you wait for the drawback?
So the stocks that I see, they're off their highs slightly, whether it's 2021 or going even further back. You know, from my standpoint, I'm looking at it. If we do have this continued rally, this continued market rally, there are areas in the market that have not grown up as much as some other areas of the market, right? And so I'm looking at those areas that will probably catch a bid potentially when we see profit taking in stocks like NVIDIA or stocks like Microsoft or stocks like Meta that have really, really gone really far up so far in this rally. So other stocks, as you mentioned, like Google, Amazon, if you look in the crypto space, Ethereum, those are areas that are off their highs and I think catch that second bid, second rally. If we continue to have kind of more of that straight line rally here.
All right, Delano Saporo, great to see you as always. Thanks for being here.
Thanks.
All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, while the bar, it just can't seem to get any lower for New York Community Bank after last week's double whammy to that stock. Also, take a look at some of Wall Street's most critical commentary warning of a long road to recovery, more issues coming, and significant changes being needed at NYCB. Top-ranked sector analyst Anton Schutz, he's going to weigh in on what's going on with not only New York Community Bank, but the regional bank sector. Stay with us.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. I'm Frances Rivera with your NBC News headlines. We begin this morning with the latest in the race for the White House. NBC News projects that Nikki Haley has won the Republican primary in Washington, D.C. It is her first win in this race, awarding her 19 more delegates. She also makes history as the first woman to ever win a GOP primary. Haley's campaign now hoping this will give her some momentum in tomorrow's Super Tuesday contest, where former President Trump is favored to win across the board. While commemorating the 59th anniversary of Bloody Sunday in Selma, Alabama, Vice President Kamala Harris reiterated the Biden administration's call for a six-week ceasefire in the Israel-Hamas war. Recent talks for a ceasefire between the two sides have stalled after Israel declined to send its delegation to Cairo for the latest round of negotiations. And a routine free throw became a historic milestone in the hands of Caitlin Clark. The Iowa superstar became NCAA's college basketball's all-time leading scorer during Sunday's regular season finale versus Ohio State. Clark now holds the top spot on the scoring list with 3,685 points. She toppled a record set over half a century ago by legendary LSU player Pistol Pete Maravich. So for a Monday morning, you're up to date with those headlines, Frank.
Yeah, congrats, her. It'll be great to see her in the WNBA next year. Francis Rivera, live in New York. Francis, thank you.
Sure thing.
All right, turning our attention now back to the banking sector. Right now, we're watching shares of a New York community bank. They are ticking up today after dropping 26% on Friday. You see the chart right there, closing at the lowest level since 1997. The move coming after NYCB disclosed, quote unquote, material weakness in its internal controls related to how it monitors risk in its loan books. Fitch also cutting NYCB's credit rating to junk. Moody's moving it even further into junk. NYCB, it's much smaller than two of the three banks that failed after historic runs on their deposits just about a year ago, but it's still sparking worries that more trouble could spark another crisis of confidence in regional banks. Let's get more insight now with Anton Schutz, president and CIO of Mending Capital. He joins us on the CNBC Newsline from the Raymond James Institutional Investors Conference in Florida. Anton, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Frank. My pleasure.
All right. So I'm sure NYCB, I know you guys are in Orlando, you're having a great time, but I'm sure NYCB was at least a brief topic of conversation. Give me a sense, when it comes to you, your peers, what do you think of Alessandro Danilo, who appears to have taken the reins since earnings, now officially becoming the CEO? Do you believe that he's the right person to fix this and these quote unquote internal control weaknesses?
All right. Well, first of all, it goes by Sandro, so let's make that easier. He turned around Flagstar, which was an ailing bank. The charges are non-cash, so that's also really important from an accounting perspective. The material weaknesses are certainly disturbing, but they've also made it clear they don't have to add more to reserves. I mean, they added over $500 million to reserves, really unallocated, to beef up their number. And they're very unique as a lender. But I'll say the really important thing here about the whole industry is they were one of the last big banks to report earnings. And because of that, everybody assigned the rest of the group with problems. They were the last one to report. Everybody else reported. Nobody else had these types of issues. Nobody was under-reserved. No one had tremendous losses in any particular segment. This is not the same as what happened in the spring. Because what happened in the spring is the banks that failed had really large concentrated deposits.
Okay.
And those depositors fled. This bank has a lot of, one, cash. Two, 75% of their deposits are actually FDIC insured. The FDIC insured all the deposits at the failed bank.
Okay. So Anton, yeah, let me jump in a second. So they don't have the same issue as an SVB may have, but I do want to talk to you about this. NYCB, it has outsized exposure, and we're going to show the audience a chart right here, to New York rent-controlled apartments. NYCB with about 3 to 4 times the exposure of any of their other peers. Is that a big deal or a little deal? Because, I mean, rent control, it doesn't get changed very often. There was a 2019 law that's created some of this. But rent control, it just doesn't change. So we're showing the audience a chart, by the way. I don't know if you can see it. Is this a big deal or a little deal?
Well, I mean, it's a big deal. They are, you know, clearly from your chart and from knowledge, I mean, this is the largest player in this industry. Also, they bank the best borrowers in this industry. They're not bottom feeders. They're lending to the billionaire families that own these places. So that's also really important because they have staying power.
All right, so they got some staying power. You've already addressed the issue of contagion. You don't see a contagion risk. Again, NYCB pretty much the last one to report. The other banks didn't have similar issues. I do want to ask you something else about NYCB. Again, downgraded by Fitch, downgraded by Moody's, a lot of concern about this company. There was also a delay in filing its 10-K. Your colleagues in the analyst community, they kind of have some mixed opinions about this delayed 10-K. Is this delay, again, a big deal, a little deal? Is it possibly good that they're delaying because they might have a plan to fix these problems?
Well, I think, you know, they're clearly putting a plan in place. I mean, Sandra's only been in place a few weeks. But there are many things that they can do. Obviously, fixing internal controls is important. They've announced a new chief risk officer. They've announced a new accounting officer. I think among many things they can do, right, is they can certainly cut the size of the balance sheet. There's assets they could potentially sell if they choose to. They can certainly cut expenses. There's lots of different things they can do. I'm certainly not going out and telling anybody you should be buying this thing hand over fist, but what I am trying to say is I believe this company survives.
All right. And you also believe, I just want to be clear, that you believe that CEO Sandro DiNello, he's the right person for the job.
He is at this point for sure. He's got, you know, internal knowledge. He sold Flagstar Bank to NYCB. I think you're going to see a name change here. I think this is going to become Flagstar Bank. I think that will be helpful, as well as from a goodwill perspective, that this company is doing something different. It's going forward on a different path. I think you'll see some moves that happen over the next few months.
Okay.
And I think we'll have a better understanding as times go forward.
All right. We're looking at the shares right now, up almost 1.5%, but important to note, still down more than 60% over the last year. Anton, great to have you here. Thanks for jumping on the CNBC Newsline.
Thank you. Have a great day.
All right. Coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, the rally at a bit of a crossroads. Can the factors fueling gains outpace the factors that are working against it? We'll talk about it coming up right after this break. It is right around 5:30 a.m. in the New York City area, and there's a lot more ahead here on Worldwide Exchange. Here's what's still on deck. The new highs, they just keep coming. The S&P and the NASDAQ set to kick off the new trading week off at fresh records. Futures, however, they are fighting for some momentum ahead of the open. The rally's set to face some new tests with a fresh batch of earnings and economic data this week, but can the factors fueling the stock market's climb hold up against the factors that seem to be working against it? And the race is on in Washington as lawmakers look to get a series of funding bills over the finish line ahead of the latest potential government shutdown deadline. It's now Monday, March 4th, 2024. You're watching Worldwide Exchange right here on CNBC. Good morning. Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. I'm Frank Collins. Let's get you ready for the trading day ahead. We pick up the half an hour with a check of U.S. stock futures and take a look. Still in the red across the board. Looks like the Dow would open about 70 points lower. We'll continue to watch this throughout the show. So this action in the pre-market after the NASDAQ. It joined the Dow and the S&P 500, seeing a first all-time intraday high on Friday. Also, its highest level since November of 2021. You can see over the last year, it's up nearly 40%. Also, we got to talk about the small caps. We keep talking about them, and then we have these other conversations where some people are bullish, some people are bearish, but we got to just admit, because the facts tell us, small caps are at all-time highs, 52-week highs, off the all-time highs, however, and they're not doing too bad. Again, trading at a 52-week high, up about 7.5% over the last year. Also, we see some growing calls this morning for more highs on the S&P 500. Bank of America boosting its already lofty year-end target for the index, now tied for the highest on the street at 5,400. We also need to check the bond market this morning ahead of a very busy week for Wall Street, including 2 days of Jay Powell testimony on Capitol Hill and the jobs report on Friday. Taking a look at yields, the benchmark 10-year right now at 4.2%. Falling a few basis points after that PCE report. Similar story for the long bond, also seen as a read on inflation expectations. Also, turning our attention to the energy market, specifically oil, after a key OPEC decision over the weekend extending voluntary production cuts through at least mid-year. Taking a look at crude prices right now, WTI very close to $80 a barrel, down fractionally right now. Brent crude just about 83.5 a barrel, down fractionally as well. We're also cryptocurrency. We got to talk about it. We're watching Bitcoin hovering right around 65,000 and closing in on its all-time high of nearly 69,000. Bitcoin, it trades around the clock. You can see it's up over 3.5%. Last year, rising more than 53%. Okay, that's your morning money setup. Now, we want to turn our attention squarely back to stocks with the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ, both of them hitting all-time highs this morning. So many on Wall Street, they're just trying to figure out if the factors fueling the rally are stronger than those factors that are working against it. Some areas in focus for the bulls, what appears to be endless enthusiasm for AI, the hope for rate cuts this year, and the broadening of rally leadership. While the bears note, higher for longer, sticky inflation, and memories of the dot-com bubble burst are real, and they are very risky. Joining me now to look at both sides of the corner, Clockwise Capital co-founder and portfolio manager James Chalkmok and William Lee, chief economist and executive director at the Milken Institute. Gentlemen, great to have you both here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
All right, so James, I'm going to start off with you. Tech continues to show leadership. We were talking about it last week. NVIDIA alone, almost a third of the S&P's gains so far this year. And at the same time, we're still seeing that the rally broaden out. Small caps at a 52-week high. We've seen other areas hit other 52-week highs. What's stopping this rally? Is there anything in your mind in the near term that could stop it?
Jay Powell could stop it this week when he testifies, as well as at the March meeting later this month. That being said, you know, we continue to be very bullish on tech. I think you can throw those dot-com bubble analogies out the window. You know, it's not the same period. Earnings are actually, the market's actually in fair value range, even assuming no estimate increases from where we are right now. So we think that tech continues to be strong. Now, that being said, you still have to be picky on where in tech you go. Obviously, you have the AI infrastructure play we've talked about on your show. Crypto is, you know, our big theme for 2024, and other you know, disruptive companies within the tech space that continue, well, it should continue to do well. But you do have to be mindful of the Fed. You do have to be mindful of the timing of the rate cut. So the way that we're approaching it is we're operating in smaller windows of time for between each economic milestone, where we take on and take off risk. You know, we have this period after PCE where we can take off risk up until the March meeting with the Fed. And that's the way you got to play it. Adapt and contract when necessary.
So, Bill, I'm going to come over to you. Over the weekend, Vital Knowledge, Adam Crisafulli and those guys, with a great note, echoing the sentiment of what we heard from many on Wall Street, that the market is simply priced to perfection. His concern in the note, at least, if we get some bad news, that could lead to a pullback. In the near term, James just cited Jay Powell, but in the near term, is there anything that you think could be, quote unquote, bad news that could hit this rally?
The worst thing that can happen to the rally is that it freaks itself out because of fear of rising interest rates. And I think one of the things that all the market would agree on is that this rally is fueled by artificial intelligence being implemented in technology that is real and profits are real. And one of the things that I think the market's going to realize is that even though the boogeyman of Jay Powell raising rates is something that could kill the rally, the reason for Powell raising rates is almost non-existent now. There's no recession. There is no high inflation in sight. Inflation is on its way down, and Chair Powell has reassured us of that. One of the things that we should watch out for is the timing and size of the rate cuts. And I think one of the things the market has underestimated is that the interest rates may level off at a much higher level because productivity from AI technologies will be much higher in the future. And that's the something that the market has to realize, that high interest rates will not cut off the rally, but reflects the higher productivity from the rally.
You know, while you're talking about productivity, you actually sent us a chart. It actually came from the Fed, but it compares the PC revolution, which does have some overlap with the dot-com bubble, and the AI boom that we're seeing today, and what that means for productivity. So I want to get a sense. We're showing the audience the two points that you want us to see. The PC revolution is on the left. The boost from AI is on the right for people that are listening. In your mind, what's the most important part of this comparison?
I think we should realize that what the PC revolution did was to boost profits, almost doubling them during the 1990s. But it was a transitory boost, a transitory boost that lasted a decade. What we see now in the post-COVID recovery is that profits have really shot up because the higher technology and better technology has allowed businesses to reorganize themselves in a much more efficient way. And if AI actually kicks in and boosts this even further, I think what we'll see is a win-win situation where not only will corporate profits per unit of output be higher going forward, but also real wages will be higher because labor productivity is also higher. So if these are the bright future things that we can see in the next year or 3 years horizon, but the thing that would kill it would be any kind of geopolitical risk that causes inflation to really skyrocket, which will cause the Fed to stop its rate cuts and be able to fuel the ongoing recovery.
You know, James, I'm coming back to you. So Bill mentioned something that a lot of people mention when it comes to risk in the markets, geopolitical risk. However, we have seen two wars going on. We still see markets hit new highs. And then also we appear to be on track for a ceasefire, at least when it comes to Israel and Gaza. It seems like we may be on that way. Isn't that just more fuel for the rally to continue, some of the factors that we're seeing basically calming down?
Yes. I mean, in short, yes. I mean, anytime you remove geopolitical risk off the table, that's going to help longer duration assets. And a lot of these tech themes that we're seeing play out right now are longer duration. So that is certainly a good thing. I think that inevitably, you know, when you think about the broader economy and rates, the rates are going to come down. The only question is when. I think that, you know, is it going to be summer or the fall? I think that's the calculus. But ultimately, these trends that we're seeing will push forward. As long as you can manage that risk between now and then, you should end the year higher than where we are right now. So we continue to stay bullish. You got to stay vigilant on the economic data. But at the end of the day, when you look at it on a four-year basis, you're going to be better off at the end of the year than you are today.
All right. I think we'll just have to wait and see what Jay Powell says. We'll have to wait and see what that jobs report looks like. A lot of questions, but James Chalkmok, Bill Lee, great to have you both here. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We're now turning our attention over to Washington, D.C. Congress is racing to get a series of funding bills approved before the latest deadline for a potential government shutdown arrives at the end of this week. Our Emily Wilkins joins us now with the latest and if lawmakers, well, if they'll get that job done. Emily, good morning. Good to see you.
Good morning, Frank. Good to see you as well. Well, yeah, congressional lawmakers are a step closer now to not just avoiding a shutdown, but actually funding part of the government for the remainder of the 2024 fiscal year. This is what they've been trying to do since the end of September. Republicans and Democratic leaders introduced an agreement on the first batch of spending bills on Sunday afternoon that covers $460 billion in government programs. The package also includes several additional measures like preventing any oil in the Strategic Petroleum Reserve from being sold to China. And another measure would strengthen how foreign ownership of U.S. forests and farmland is tracked and reviewed. Now, Republicans and Democrats can both tout some wins on this. Republicans have several culture war issues, such as prohibiting the Justice Department from targeting parents who speak up at school board meetings. They were also able to keep a pro-gun measure in the bill, making it harder for Veterans Affairs Department to report a veteran's info to the National Criminal Background Check System. Democrats also got a couple of wins. They were able to get more funding for a nutritional program for women, infants, and children, and to increase aid to help those in rural areas afford rentals. Now, this bill package has to pass both chambers by Friday to prevent a shutdown, but lawmakers aren't in a rush. The first vote on the bill is expected in the House on Wednesday after lawmakers return to D.C. Tuesday night. Speaker Mike Johnson is again planning to use an expedited process that's going to require Democrats to help him, but it will avoid the chance of a small group of hardline conservatives sinking the bill. And the pieces of government funding moving this week, they're kind of considered to be the easier bills to get to an agreement on. The rest of the $1.6 trillion package is going to be due on March 22nd. Now, negotiations are ongoing, according to both Republicans and Democrats. But, Frank, that package is going to be a lot more difficult. So we'll see where we stand on that in a couple weeks.
All right. So a lot of issues here on the table. Emily, you mentioned the pace that congressional leaders are moving at right now. This whole process has been a bit dragged out. Aside from this, how is this dragged out process? How has it impacted some of the other legislation that they're considering?
I mean, Frank, the fact that lawmakers are still working on the appropriations bills in March means that they've had to just push a lot of other priorities further down the road. They were coming up with an update for the Federal Aviation Administration. That's now got bumped until May. FISA, of course, a huge component for international security and intelligence. That's been delayed now for several months. And they're just other priorities. You've heard a lot of talk about getting AI legislation done. We haven't seen anything on that. We know there's a lot of momentum around kids, online safety. We know that there is a bill that would basically help companies and parents get various tax benefits that they're hoping to get again for the upcoming year. All of that stuff is in the works, but it's really hard to be able to find the time to actually take those votes and move those bills through and do the final pieces of negotiation and work on them, because lawmakers have really had to be solely focused on making sure that the government's not going to be shutting down. There's kind of almost universal agreement that that would be a terrible thing. And this having to deal with deadline after deadline after deadline has just meant that many other priorities have gotten put on the back burner.
All right, Emily Wilkins, live in D.C. Emily, always great to see you. All right, coming up here in Worldwide Exchange, a bullish call in the Magic Kingdom to kick off the week. We got your morning call sheet. That's coming up next. Stay with us. Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Time now for your morning call sheet. We start with Morgan Stanley raising its price target on Disney to $135 a share. Morgan Stanley says its raised target reflects a more rapid and confident path to streaming profits in the quarters and the year ahead. Shares of Disney unchanged. Citi downgrading its rating on Ferrari to a sell. It says while it likes the quality and long-term growth prospects for the luxury vehicle maker, it's making the move on the stock's valuation. Shares of Ferrari down almost 2.5%. And Jefferies upgrading its rating on BP to a buy. Jeffrey saying it expects the oil company stock to continue to close its valuation gap against competitors and that it now has an attractive valuation. Taking a look at shares of BP, they're up almost 1.5%. All right, time now for your global briefing. We start with Japan's Nikkei surpassing 40,000 for the first time thanks to ultra-loose monetary policy and the weaker yen. It's now the world's best-performing major stock index this year. It's up nearly 20%. Bit of a different story for China as the country prepares to set its annual growth target this week. Officials are expected to discuss how to stimulate China's sluggish economy and lower levels of consumer and business sentiment. And the EU's antitrust chief is set to hold a press conference later this morning. According to Reuters, Margrethe Vestager is expected to announce a fine and an order to Apple over Spotify's complaint of anti-competitive practices from the iPhone maker. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, we have the one word that every investor needs to know today. Plus, a whirlwind week on tap for investors, including fresh comments from Jay Powell and the latest look at the labor market, what you need to watch, and the moves you need to make with your money. We'll have both when we come right back here on Worldwide Exchange. Stay with us. All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. It's time now for your WEX wrap-up. We start watching shares of Boeing and Spirit AeroSystems. Taking a look, you can see both are moving higher in the pre-market. Boeing up fractionally, Spirit AeroSystems up about 2%. Boeing says it's in talks to buy back Spirit as both companies look to correct production flaws related to January 737 MAX 9 blowout. Supermicro and Deckers, both of those stocks, they're surging in the pre-market right now. You can see Supermicro up double digits. The stocks will be joining the S&P 500 next Monday following the index's quarterly rebalancing. They will replace Whirlpool and Zions Bancorp. Arkhouse Management and Brigade Capital Management, they're both raising their takeover offer for Macy's to $6.6 billion. That's nearly $1 billion higher than their previous bid. OPEC Plus countries agreeing to extend their voluntary output reductions until at least mid-year. That includes the 1 million barrel per day, quote-unquote, voluntary cut by Saudi Arabia. Bank of America raising its S&P year-end price target to 5,400. This ties B of A with UBS as the highest forecast on the street. And Dune Part 2 bringing the box office out of its two-month rut, debuting at a 2024 record high. I'm just trying to look at the highlights right here, the little movie part right here, of $81 million over the weekend. IMAX says it ran out of seats for screenings. I wanted to go. I couldn't get any tickets. All right. Here's what to watch in the week ahead. Several high-profile earnings. They include Target, Nordstrom, Campbell's Soup, Kroger, Broadcom, and Gap. And on the economic front, we get the monthly jobs report and JOLTS reports, as well as the ISM service data. Central banks, they're also in focus with Fed Chairman Jerome Powell testifying before Congress and an ECB rate decision. Speaking of Congress, lawmakers racing this week to approve funding bills before the shutdown deadline at the end of this week. We're also watching Super Tuesday with more than a dozen primaries or caucuses, as well as President Biden's State of the Union address. So a very busy week. All right, the market's kicking off this new trading week with the S&P and the Nasdaq once again sitting at fresh record all-time highs. But we're checking futures right now. We see a bit of pressure right here. It looks like the Dow would open about 75 points lower. Let's bring in Ivory Johnson, founder of Delancey Wealth Management. He's also a member of the CNBC Financial Advisors Council. Ivory, good to see you. It's been a while.
Good to see you as well, Frank.
All right, so Ivory, just take your temperature real quick. How do you see today shaping up? What's your WEX word of the day?
Well, my word of the day is breath. You know, one of the things that I looked at last week is I saw the market going up and then Microsoft and Google were down. I had to rub my eyes a little bit because there's been so much concentration with the Magnificent Seven. What's happened now is we've got broader participation. And that's why breadth is the word of the day. 78% of stocks in the S&P 500 are above their 200-day moving average line. The same numbers for the 50-day. You'll see over 60% participation above the 250-day moving average line. For the Nasdaq 100, okay. And I think that's a very positive sign for the market.
All right. Also, you're making some moves. Obviously, we have some news about the oil market over the weekend, OPEC extending their cuts, and you're buying into the energy sector. Was that the catalyst for the decision, these cuts?
Well, that was one of the catalysts, but then we're seeing like a global resurgence. Germany's coming out of a recession. For all the bad news that we saw in China, they seem to be coming out of a recession as well. India, their GDP just grew by 8.4%. And then we're starting to see a little bit of growth happen in the United States as well. A lot of that from government spending. But still, we're seeing a little bit more growth, not just in the U.S., but around the world. And that's going to be good for oil.
All right. I know you're also looking ahead to Jay Powell. He's going to be on Capitol Hill this week, obviously giving us some insight into the Fed's path forward. What are your expectations and how is that guiding your investment thesis?
I don't know that he can cut interest rates right now when we have sticky inflation. If you look at the Case-Shiller, housing prices are still rising. That's 30% of GDP. I don't think he'll cut rates. But what I do see is that the tightening will decrease. And so, you know, the global liquidity is really one of the things that correlates well with something like Bitcoin. You've seen a stimulus package out of Japan. It's global liquidity.
Okay.
That drives Bitcoin. So that's one of the things I would use to hedge, you know, what's happening with government spending.
Yeah, I know you're also looking at possibly buying some gold. I'm going to give you your credit. You were talking Bitcoin when nobody was talking Bitcoin and you stuck to your guns. Looks like you're getting rewarded now. Ivory Johnson, always great to see you. Thank you very much. One more quick look at the futures. As we mentioned, under pressure all morning long. Looks like the Dow would open up just about 75 points lower. That does it for us. Squawk Box is coming up next. Thanks for watching. You've been listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. You can always catch us live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.